slowly gave way to the more familiar sight of normal destruction. They began to spot an occasional building that still retained part of its roof. There would be the glimpse of a window that actually had fragments of original glass within its frame. Abe was riding in the center, hugging the butt of the Browning to his shoulder. As there seemed little threat, Ryan had agreed that they should risk having the upper hatch partly open, giving them the pleasure of fresh air circulating around the stuffy interior of the wag.
Someone's moving.
Where?
JB eased back on the throttle, wary of running them into a trap.
Green, 30, 120.
Ryan sighed. To the right of the vehicle, 30 degrees off the line ahead, and about 120 yards away. JB aimed the vid in that direction, trying to pick up what Abe had seen, while Ryan looked directly out.
Can't see it. Is it still there, Abe?
No, Ryan. Vanished into a narrow sort of alley between a couple of houses.
Armed?
Looked like some kind of harpoon gun, spear, you know?
The SEC camera wasn't showing them any sort of movement, just the featureless expanse of the ruined ville. JB glanced sideways at Ryan for confirmation.
Best shut that hatch.
Yeah, close it down. Don't want somebody lobbing a frag gun in the top.
They wouldn't get close enough. I'd spill their guts all over the pavement.
Shut it anyway, Abe.
Secure!
Storm coming up.
JB and Ryan had changed places as they rumbled slowly westward, allowing the one-eyed man to get used to the controls. If the blacktop had been clear of rubble, they could have pushed on at five times the speed. But there was always the risk of the wag throwing a track in a pile of bricks.
How's it look?
Heavy.
It had been 3/4 of an hour since Abe had spotted someone moving. Since then, they hadn't actually seen anyone, but Christie had told Ryan that she had a strong feeling that they were still being watched. Now they were away from the blighted center of the city, into the suburbs. The houses were less damaged, and nature was creeping voraciously back. The highway had been rippled by earth movements, and lush weeds sprouted through. Ryan pressed the button that lifted the screens over the shields, allowing him a clear sight of the region straight ahead of them. He touched the brake pedal, slowing their speed to something close to walking pace. Now he saw what JB had meant by the threat of a storm. The sky to the far west was a dusky gray, streaked with slashes of purple and crimson clouds. The sun had vanished, and the wind was rising. As he looked out, Ryan saw jagged lances of lightning crackling silver against the darkness. He guessed the core of the bad weather was still around 10 to 15 miles away from them, but closing fast. Christie brushed a strand of fiery crimson hair back out of her eyes.
Sure looks like a chem storm. Hope this wag's waterproofed.
I doubt it floats.
Ryan opened up the throttle again, seeing that the highway ahead was relatively clear of obstructions.
Could be trouble with the electrics.
Find cover? Some of these duplexes got wag ports at the side.
Might we not endeavor to locate a more substantial dwelling and then seek to pass the coming night within it?
Ryan considered Doc's words.
Don't see why not. Anyone object?
Not me.
It would be good if you could possibly find us a house with some beds in it.
Ryan turned the wag off the main route, taking a quiet, tree-lined side street that rose in a gentle gradient. The houses were virtually undamaged, making him wonder whether the Ruskies had used neutron bombs in some of the suburbs, taking out the population and leaving their homes. It was strange to be tracking up these quiet roads in a military vehicle, past mailboxes and sloping lawns of waving grass. You almost expected someone rocking away on one of the white-painted porches, a glass of lemonade frosting on a table at his elbow. JB pointed directly ahead of them where the road divided.
Nice house there.
It was Victorian Gothic, all gilt and gingerbread, with ornamented gables and balconies, the paint peeling and faded. Some of the windows on the first floor had been smashed, but the upstairs casements were untouched, dark, and somehow threatening.
It looks spooky. Wes Craven spooky.
We going in?
Why not?
It must have been beautiful here once, don't you reckon, lover?
They had parked and locked the wag around back of the building, close to what looked like it had once been a kitchen garden. And everyone had split up, exploring. Christie and Ryan walked past the garage to a side part of the huge area of grass and trees, which was massively overgrown. It was difficult to imagine cropped lawns and neatly pruned bushes. There was a section with bulrushes that might once have been a fish pond, and at the back, where the ground sloped away, they discovered a narrow stream. It was set at the bottom of a steep-walled ravine of glistening black rock, where turbulent brown water boiled and raced. Ryan drew Christy back from the danger of the undercut brink.
Wouldn't fancy your chances if you went into that.
It was difficult to see where the stream went, as the undergrowth along its edge concealed its course, but it appeared to dogleg toward the right, away from the house.
Looks like there's plenty of wildlife around here.
Christy stooped and pointed to the trodden paths that wound through the grass.
Fox, small deer, possum. Could even be beaver.
Ryan knelt at her side, examining the marks in the moist earth.
Not beaver, and... What?
Ryan straightened, reaching automatically for the Sig Sauer on his hip.
Listen.
Trouble?
Could be.
They waited, back to back, watching the shifting greenery all around them. But the bird call wasn't repeated.
Best get to the others. That storm's coming our way.
The day was darkening as the chem clouds raced toward them. By the time they reached the back porch, the first heavy drops of rain were already beginning to splatter on the great slabs of Yorkstone that made up the patio. Doc was standing under cover, shading his eyes as he stared out across the garden.
I thought I saw someone coming after you.
Who?
Well, I lost sight of them. If they were there in the first place. Probably an old man's imagination.
Now the rain began with serious intent. Dean joined them on the porch, looking at the downpour.
Lucky we're dry and safe, Dad.
Ryan allowed his son to take him on a conducted tour of the mansion. Both of them ducking at a turning of the landing when a bolt of lightning ripped into a tall sycamore less than 100 feet from the nearest window. The thunder was devastatingly loud. The upper floor was filled with a bitter stench of raw ozone, and the panes of glass rattled in their frames.
Ah, shut up, Rick!
The boy grabbed at his father's hand, holding it for a brief frightened moment as the building shook.
Close.
It was no surprise that the imposing house had been ransacked, looted from the topmost attic bedroom down to the capacious cellars. Everything that could be eaten or drunk or traded or burned was gone. But there was still a feeling of faded grandeur, rare in Deathlands, a sense of gracious living that Ryan had only read about in old books or glimpsed in flickering segments of vids. Dean let go of Ryan's hand now that the immediate shock of the thunderbolt had passed.
How many'd live in a squat like this?
3 or 4.
You mean in this room? I mean the whole place.
That's right. Could have had servants or slaves. Paid them to cook, scrub, wash, and all that stuff. But maybe only 3 or 4.
Wow! I seen places smaller than this one with about 500 living in it.
The boy was exaggerating, but not by much. Despite the venom of the chem storm, the large mansion stood secure and dry. The lightning was almost constant, pouring great bursts of pink, purple, and silver brightness over the Chicago suburb. The wind had risen to near gale strength, whipping the tops of the trees and bending the trunks of the slender aspens like taut bows. With the fallen branches of a tree out back, JB had built a fire in the hearth of what looked like it had been the main living room. The flames rose into the wide chimney, casting flickering shadows across the ornamented ceiling. Ryan and his son had rejoined the others, sitting sprawled on coats around the blazing branches. When night finally came, Ryan decided that they would post guards. That bird cry that wasn't from the throat of any bird he'd ever heard had put Ryan a little on edge. Now for a while they could all relax. Ryan lay down, Christy close by him, letting his eye wander around the room, taking in the melancholy air of lost opulence. The wallpaper was dark blue, heavily embossed with a pattern of silver vine leaves, with an occasional splash of acanthus. There were several rectangular discolored patches that showed where paintings must once have been hung from the sturdy iron hooks. The wainscoting and picture rail had mostly been torn down for kindling. The only relic of the furnishings was a portrait in a battered gilt frame, leaning in a corner of the room away from the windows. The glass was gone and the picture was smeared and torn. It seemed to be an elderly couple, a man with a trim beard, both wearing elegant, jeweled coronets. Ryan didn't recognize either of them. There were holes in the paper and plaster on the walls, where there had once been light fixtures. Bare strands of wire protruded from the center of the high ceiling, with a twisted piece of brass dangling from it. Two small, dusty crystal prisms hooked on the brass revealed that it had once been a part of a splendid chandelier.
Must have been beautiful, eh, lover? Betcha they had those great enormous four-poster bed